Welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening, David.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Once again, aghast at the audacity of rich people sometimes.
Okay.
In a way that I'm almost jealous of.
What did we do now?
On the drive here, I was behind a Porsche.
Okay.
With the personalized license plate, drunk. Right? That's ballsy.
It is. Yeah.
Right? I can't imagine, because it's an invitation. It was like a bright blue Porsche, yeah. Like Carrera. I don't know much about Porsches or
was Porsches. The person driving well?
They were. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess you have to.
I felt safe. Yeah. You really have to be on your best behavior. It reminded me, I used to have a shirt back when we lived together. I had a shirt that I would like sleep in. It was a long sleeve shirt that said sober on it. And it was like, I think the point was supposed to be like a, you know, you call the big guy tiny type of deal. But anyway, I was just thrown for the loop by the drunk license plate.
Well, and also that's the thing is, on one hand, yes, of course, you're welcoming a cop to pull you over. But also that seems like just such a cry for help to your friends as well. It's like, hey, look at my license plate. They're like, yeah, are you okay? It just seems like what a weird thing to identify yourself as.
Part of me is surprised that they let you do that.
Yeah.
Because there's a guy, I don't know him. And in fact, I don't even know for sure it's a guy. It's like a muscle car, so I guess I assumed it was a guy. Mm-hmm. At my work, whose license plate is in hell.
Oh.
Right? I know. And he's got a personalized, he's got a reserved spot at my work, and I want to meet him and be like, why didn't you ask for spot 666?
Oh, sure.
Probably because he doesn't want to go all the way down to P6 or whatever. Yeah. But if you have a reserve spot at a building, the point is that you don't have to go all the way down to the bottom.
Right.
But anyway,
he's not going to be that on brand.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I spend my day looking at license plates. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of good ones recently. I saw a Funk Machine. That was a purple car. I can't remember what it was. Funk Machine on the,
it would have to be purple, I feel like, right?
And I spend my day listening to music and podcasts on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. Mm-hmm. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. Tyler, you and I use them each and every day of our lives. Today, I'm listening to, you know, I keep up on new music, mm-hmm. and I'm into metal a little bit.
Yes.
And
more than a little bit, but yes.
Well, I'm always aware of like which metal bands or which metal albums like cross over and get reviewed by like a Pitchfork.
Yeah.
And it's usually like it's either like a big name metal band or it's like a metal band the mainstream hasn't heard of, but have a really great album. Mm-hmm. And so I was pleased to see that the new album, which is all the talk of the metal community, got a very good review on Pitchfork by the band Blood Incantation. So I was listening to Blood Incantation today. Sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds that are available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that already low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Tyler?
Yes.
Let's get into it, shall we?
Okay.
We have a very exciting guest for us, someone we've wanted to have on for a while, but you and I are bad at asking people to be on the show.
That's true. We used to be very good.
Yeah.
And then just got really complacent, I suppose.
But I'm glad this finally worked out because we've wanted this person on the show for a while. He's got a podcast as well. He's a host. He's an actor. And of course, he is near and dear to our hearts because Tyler and I, when we first lived together in college, our first time away from home together, we watched a lot of Beat the Geeks.
Aww,
and so our guest today is J. Keith Van Stratton.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much. What a nice introduction. That was my annual moment of sincerity.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that was very sweet. Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm very askable. You can always ask me.
I know.
Anyone listening, you got a podcast? As long as I can promote my podcast, and I don't have to talk about, you know, Nazis or something.
This is uncomfortable because I was gonna. First off, we are not gonna let you talk about your show.
Oh gosh!
And what's your take on this Goebbels guy?
I guess I should rephrase. I don't mind if I get to talk about Nazis or
Nazis.
I don't want any show that is promoting Nazis or Nazism.
You don't
want
to talk to Nazis.
I'm gonna go on the. I'm gonna take the hot take of anti-Nazi.
Yeah. Okay. All right, fair enough. A hotter take than it should be, but okay.
Yeah. I've noticed that a lot lately. I used to not have to specify that. It used to be sort of a given, but now I have to be clear.
I've mentioned this before on the show. We are so bad at booking guests that we failed to get back to Ed Begley Jr.
Oh, no.
Wasn't that a mistake that we made
once? No. We got back to him, and there was a lot of back and forth eventually, but then it just kind of faded away, like longer gaps between back and forth, and then if I recall correctly, it was left in the Begley camp.
Oh, okay.
You got to get him when the wind's blowing, or else he doesn't have power, can't email you.
So, I was about to ask you a question, Jake Keith, but you're taking a drink of water, so I'm going to vamp for just a second. It's all settled?
All done.
So I'm going to start by asking you the question that I ask every first time guest, which is, where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
Oh, wow. Hot question. Chicago, Illinois.
Okay.
That's where we watched that Beat the Geeks show.
Is that right? You guys were at some sort of university in the Chicagoland area?
We went to Columbia College.
Oh, okay. I have a cousin who goes there.
Yeah. What's that?
I have a cousin who goes there.
Oh, okay, yes.
You study communications, I'm going to guess?
We studied film and video.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's ways of communicating.
And that's my degree. That's Tyler's undergraduate, because Tyler... Right. Went back to grad school.
Hello, doctor.
Please, master.
Hello, master.
sounds gross.
Yeah, seems like doctor should be below master. From Chicago, I was there till I was 14, and then came out to Los Angeles, and then I've lived in New York off and on for a few years as well, but mostly in LA.
Wow. So I guess I assume when someone is in the entertainment business that they.
And that's a very kind assumption. Thank you.
But I mean, I would have assumed that you moved to Los Angeles to before your career.
No, I kind of wish that I had. I think I would have been more motivated. I think rather I was sort of already here, and it was sort of like, oh, well, I guess my friends are doing this, getting headshots. I guess I should do that. What? You're doing an acting class? I guess I should do that. And that really was. It just kind of was kind of that. And then I was a little bit more motivated after college because I went to college in New York, and then I came back here. But again, you don't have that same kind of motivation when you already have a place to stay, you know, stayed at my parents' place and then, you know, had all my old stuff. So, I sometimes had this fantasy that if I had made the big move out to LA being from somewhere else that, you know, suddenly I wouldn't be depressed or unmotivated or anything like that. It's just, let me go with it. Let me have it.
Moving to Los Angeles is weird. Can weirdly be the most depressing thing.
Oh gosh. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. No, at least I was used to a lot of things by then. That's true.
But I remember, I think it's so counterintuitive, but the lack of like a winter was weirdly depressing for me. Cause I was like, I just remember it being like January or February, and like I had the windows open in my apartment, like my first year here.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is I'm not with my thoughts the way I should be.
Yeah, it can be a little disorienting. Yeah. There are definitely a couple of moments where it's like, hey, it's December and I'm in a t-shirt and a convertible. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
and then,
cool.
But then other times you're like, who am I?
But now,
why is the sky dark?
After 14 years, now I'm totally acclimated. I drive slow in the rain. I put on a coat when it's 53 degrees out. Yes. Like, I'm totally acclimated.
You judge people in Porsches. You got it all down.
Some people in Porsches. More welcome than, judgment.
Yes, would appear.
That guy with that license plate. Yeah, he's he wants you to. You can't be neutral on the guy with the drunk license.
It's true. Yeah, I know that you just told me, but then when you said it again with the drunk license plate, it just sounds so terrible. I was raised in California, so I'm used to of course, there are seasons, but it's not they're not as pronounced as when I lived in Denver, Missouri, or Chicago, especially this time of year.
Yeah.
But I've appreciated how chilly it's been here lately. Chilly to the point where it's like California cold. It's gotten into the 40s a little bit. And it's like, this is nice. I like this.
Yeah.
I now prefer this winter to like the 10 degree Chicago winter.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, and we say California cold, we're talking about like Los Angeles cold, because I spent Thanksgiving in the desert with my sister-in-law. Oh, sure. It's in the 30s.
Yes.
It's like almost freezing down there over there. That's not what we're here to talk about, though.
No.
It could be, but no,
so,
I agree.
So I guess you already kind of answered the question just by following your friend's lead. I was going to say, how did you eventually get to where Tyler and I saw you on TV in 2001 or whatever when Pete the Geeks was on?
That was it, 2001, 2002. Let's see. Well, I was always interested in comedy and my background's in improv. I've been doing that since I was a kid. Hmm. And so everything just kind of accidentally led to other stuff. So I kind of had some awareness that show business was something that existed and that I might be able to participate in, you know, once I was sort of in high school. But improv led into doing sketch comedy, and that led into doing stand up, and that actually led into doing some animation writing just from different people I met in the different peer groups and being asked to try different things. And so the first time I actually decided what do I want to do and what do I think I might be pretty good at, I literally just sat down and kind of made lists of those things and realized, like, oh, I wonder if hosting's a thing that would kind of fit that, because it had elements of improv and sketch and stand-up, but I didn't really feel like I was doing any of those things in any way that I was bringing anything new to the party. But I thought, oh, hosting might be kind of interesting. And so I literally just rented a theater and picked a date and just said, all right, I'm going to do a talk show. And so I remember driving. I remember the night, the first night I was doing it, driving to the theater and just having this total out of body experience of like, what am I doing? Like, I have to do a monologue, and I had a sidekick, and we had celebrity guests and musicians and comedians and all that. And eventually I just kept doing it more and more. And that got me a little bit of a reputation for hosting. And that got me the audition for Comedy Central. I did a different pilot for them that didn't go, but then that kind of had me in the mix of hosts for comedy shows, for game shows they were doing, and then they brought me in for Beat the Geek. So I kind of owe everything I do at improv, and then different, you know, accidental meetings since then.
I imagine that's, you know, a lot of the we know as you do, a lot of comedians, and many of whom have hosted shows and all that. And when you talk to people about hosting, whether it be like stand up and having to manage a crowd and occasionally talk to the crowd, or improv where you have to be able to think on your feet, like that does seem to just naturally lead to hosting, where you're responding to contestants, again, managing the audience, and also keeping everything moving. And I know that that's something that a lot of people that we know, like a Bill Dwyer or a Jimmy Pardo, like, they often express a certain degree of frustration that hosting so often goes to actors who, have a name, but maybe aren't trained in this particular thing.
Yeah, no, it drives people crazy. Especially Jimmy. and I mean, it's part of the reason that I'm kind of not really in the on-camera hosting business anymore. I mean, I host the podcast as one of the reasons I wanted to do this show that I'm doing, Go Fact Yourself, was because I did miss having that, sort of working that part of my brain and having that kind of interaction and artistic expression, if you will. But it was really frustrating. That was right around the time when I was really trying to be active in it, and when I was having some success. I mean, with Beat the Geeks was probably the most high profile thing I did, but I did a whole bunch of pilots that ended up not going. And it was right around that time where all of a sudden it wasn't. They weren't looking for necessarily people who could host. They were looking for people who had a following, people who had a name. Yeah. And so you started to see people, you know, you go on Dancing with the Stars, and then your next step is you host a game show, or, and then that progressed more and more to the point where you have, you know, Oscar winner Jamie Foxx is hosting a game show. He doesn't, what is he going to be hosting a game show for?
That's true.
And so, you know, the guys who, if I can put myself in that category of Bill and Jimmy, who are obviously great at what they do, there just weren't those opportunities for us. And so, that was really frustrating. I know Jimmy and Bill and I all take the idea of hosting seriously. I mean, we have fun with it, and we love it, and it brings us great joy, but it's a skill, and it is something that you develop. And, you know, I've done hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of doing hosting. And so it's a little bit of a slap in the face that someone just thinks they can plug anyone into. And then, but then on the other hand, there's other people who end up being great at it who you never would know. So,
sure.
But
then you also got the, I don't know.
Yeah, no, there's plenty who weren't.
You need to be diplomatic, but yeah. That show, I think it was called The Sing-Off. Was that Nick Lachey?
I don't know.
Oh, he was terrible.
Yeah.
I also watch a lot of Food Network, and that's a lot of a weird thing where it's like, oh, you're a successful successful restaurateur. Why don't you host a series?
That
doesn't always work out.
But they've also changed the role of what a host is, and I, for better or for worse. I think for worse, but at least they're not having those people do stuff. There's far less spontaneity that you see. There's far less organic conversation, and those are my favorite parts of the show. I mean, most of the shows that I've known over the years, including Go Fact Yourself, like, yes, they have a format, but it's basically an excuse to talk to people, mm-hmm. you know, and it's sort of like, you know, I wouldn't compare myself to Groucho Marx, although the LA Times did once. but like, it's really just an excuse. You know, a lot of these things are just like, you know, a very, very loose structure to hang on a conversation and a spontaneous thing. And so, you know, my favorite kind of shows are where, like, yeah, there's points and somebody wins, but it really doesn't matter. It's really more about, you know, what's the conversation that you bring out. So yeah, that's an element that I miss as these shows, not just game shows, but I think talk shows became a lot more structured, a lot less willing to be surprised by something that somebody would say. And it's interesting that I think podcasts have kind of filled that void in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
First of all, just because it's so much host driven, so many of them, and because you have the time to have a real conversation and have some spontaneity come out.
Not I feel like
right now, but you know,
I feel like when you see Conan O'Brien clearly get kind of bored with the talk show format, change his show, and then while at the same time pivot into podcasting, like, I think that kind of backs up what you're talking about, that like there is a certain degree of freedom that comes with podcasting. I think even people like Conan O'Brien, who have as much freedom as they want, but it's like, yeah, but I still feel constrained,
right?
So I'm gonna go here and do this other thing.
Just it doesn't seem like there are a lot of TV formats left that really allow for a host natural curiosity to be followed. And like, those are my favorite moments, is when you accidentally discover something, or you make a joke and someone follows up on it, and you completely ditch whatever interview notes you had because you realize you're onto something. Like, it just seems that podcasts are now the place where that kind of thing happens.
I guess that's the reason why, like, Family Feud, which is a game show that is still dependent on not knowing what people are going to say, is hosted by a professional stand-up comedian, right?
Yeah.
Steve Harvey's still doing that?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, he can milk it like anybody.
Yeah. And I remember liking John O'Hurley, who was, you know, more of an actor than anything else, but I remember thinking he did a pretty good job with it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he sort of had that raconteur vibe. Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
He played the Jay Peterman thing.
But, you know, you're talking about, like, with Jimmy and Bill and me, again, if I can put myself in that category, but, you know, there were shows that were designed to be comedy game shows that you know, where you really relied on people to be able to, you know, to manage the time, to have a conversation and still be still make sure that the game is happening, but have an awareness that you're doing this in a presentational manner. I really miss that. And it's not just necessarily that era. One of my favorite game shows was What's My Line, which I ended up doing a live stage version of. And, you know, it was live on television for over 50 years. Mm-hmm. And to have that kind of a format where you're mixing in talking with celebrities and talking with, quote unquote, regular people, you know, that's my very favorite thing to do.
And to bring in somebody else, I remember Graham Elwood.
Sure.
Said, like, I remember listening, this might have been when he was on our show or some other show, but he had said that, like, his dream when he was a kid was hosting a game show.
Right.
And I know a number of people that would, you know, like, snobbish people that would find that so tremendously banal, that, like, oh, your dream is to host a game show? What kind of shallow person are you? But
I'm this kind of shallow
person. Right, that's the thing, is, like, there are people, and I myself love game shows, and when they're working, it's so mesmerizing.
Yeah.
And so for someone to, like, genuinely dream to be a part of that, and then Graham building an entire career out of stand-up, mostly so that he can occasionally get, like, game show host work, is really fascinating, like, for some people.
Yeah, and that's why it's kind of more maddening when, you know, someone who's super successful already is like, oh, yeah, I guess I'll do this. What? Oh, sure, whatever. How hard could it be? You know?
I imagine it's like when an actor decides to, like, start a band on a lark. Yeah. And you're a musician's like, well, I guess I'll just be over here.
Exactly.
30 Seconds to Mars does this thing.
Or I always feel bad for the other guys, like the other guys in the box cutters, like, who actually want to be in a band, but they will always be second fiddle to Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah. Who's like, he goes, hey guys, I can't rehearse. I have to go be in a movie for 3 months.
Yeah.
So, but no, we're still a real band. It's fine.
Right.
But,
well, you also like movies.
Sure.
Which I guess is, it's a good thing you live in.
Are there people who don't like movies?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Like who?
I can't say.
Oh, but someone you've had on the show. Someone you haven't had on the movie interview podcast.
No. On this show, it's mostly been
people that like movies. But you've met people who don't like movies.
I'm
like,
related to people that don't like movies. Like, yes.
Okay.
I know people who don't like... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, you mean actively don't like movies? Because I've known people...
You're
like,
people who don't know movies, who aren't a movie buff, who haven't seen some of the classics.
But I'm saying I once had a girlfriend who, like... she didn't hate movies. She just, the movies just weren't on her radar at all.
Yeah. The like, people it's not important to,
she didn't but you know actually Dan know people Aykroyd who was like, it was just weird. Like she was like, oh yeah, that's not my, she could tell you the members of like all the, of like punk bands and stuff, but okay. She just didn't know anything about movies.
I would say the person that I'm thinking of, maybe it's not that he actively does not like movies so much so as he is, I've never met somebody so indifferent to movies as a concept.
Interesting.
Which if I ever get stuck in a in like a room with this person and no one else is there, I'm like,
right,
I don't know what to talk about.
Like, is it someone, like, do they not have a favorite movie?
I'm sure,
because like, I'm not a big reader, but I have a favorite book.
Right.
Or, you know, at some point in my life that was important to me.
I'm sure if you were to ask him, he'd probably say, I really like Raiders of the Lost Ark or something like that. Something from many years ago.
Right.
But that would
be tough because that is my, and my wife like makes fun of me for it, that like, if there's nothing else to talk about, the thing I always go back
to is
like, you seen any good movies lately? Or that's the thing that
it's
always,
interesting.
Like, for my, most like, people, it's a go-to.
Right.
Yeah.
My dad doesn't like games. And I can't understand that at all. I mean, as I've gotten to know him, it makes more sense. But like, that's like I understand. Like, no, he doesn't. It's not just he doesn't like, you know, card games or fantasy games or, you know, games. He doesn't like games of any kind.
Like that, sports, he doesn't like.
No, he'll enjoy watching a sport or playing a sport, but a game, like specifically, let's play a game, something, you know, something on a table or with a, you know, with a group of people, has absolutely no interest in, does not derive joy from it.
So that thing everyone puts on their online dating profile about how they don't like to play games, that actually is true.
He means it literally.
No, he's totally into emotional manipulation.
Oh, no, actually, you know, you might be onto something there. But what about movies?
So the thing we ask, I guess, do you have a favorite movie?
I think you said
you have a favorite book. Well, first off, what is your favorite book? I'm curious now.
Oh, boy. I think my favorite book might be The Pig Man by Paul Zindel, which I read when I was in seventh grade, and I reread some years ago, and it still makes me cry.
Okay.
It's pretty, it was very emotional. It's a really nice, sweet, you know, young adult book.
Now let me ask you this.
Yes.
When you reread it and you got emotional, were you getting emotional about the book or about the time in your life when you read the book?
Probably more the latter, but it still stuck with me. It's still a very sweet book. Very sweet.
Yeah. That's something that happens with movies a lot of the time. I was watching a while ago a documentary called The Rock of Fire Explosion, and it's all about the band from automated band from Showbiz Pizza. And there is, and some of the interviewees, there is a guy who's just talking about, you know, he grew up in the 80s and that he just loved he just tried to keep his he spent his whole life trying to keep his childhood alive. And you see him like play like an old school Nintendo and all that. And I don't look down on any of that, but there are times when I just feel like there has to be some element of arrested development there.
Yeah.
When you idealize this moment in your life.
Yeah. It definitely is interesting revisiting what you thought were some of your favorite movies, especially comedies. Oh. Like, it's really interesting to see the comedies that hold up. And the worst is when you're showing it to someone and they're seeing it for the first time and you're like, no, I swear it's going to get really funny. And then you realize, like, I remember loving the original The In-Laws.
I haven't seen it.
I would have told you before I rewatched it a few years ago, oh my God, it's great. It's a classic. You got to see it. They even remade it. And it's, you know, Alan Arkin and, you know, everything is great. And then I rewatched it with someone a few years ago and I was like, oh my God, was I an idiot? Or, you know, or I guess, you know, your sense of humor changes. So that's the case. So to answer your question, I've said for many, many years that my favorite movie is Avalon. Barry Levinson film from, I think, 1992 or so.
Okay.
But I haven't rewatched it in at least 10 years. So I don't know if it is anymore. Because there's certainly been a lot of great movies since. But until further notice, that is my favorite movie.
I feel like you've seen it in the last 10 years. You've not seen it in the last
10 years.
Okay, well.
It's probably been at least 10 years since I've seen it.
All right. But you've seen it in your adult years.
Yes.
So I feel like you have a pretty good sense of it. You know?
Okay.
If you said your favorite movie was... Adventures in Babysitting and you saw it at the time.
Right.
And that was it. Then I feel like, okay, you might want to rewatch that one.
Right.
But Avalon, you've seen it. To me, recently as anything in the last 15 to 20 years.
Okay, I have seen it in the last 15 to 20 years.
There you go. I think you're good.
Okay, good.
That adult thing, I know I've used this example before, but when I was a kid, I watched Willow all the time. Because I was the perfect age for Willow, and I remembered it as this just like fast-paced, rollicking adventure movie, and I watched it once as an adult, and it's a stinker. It is such a bad movie.
It's also hard because so many things have been influenced by other things. Like, I imagine, like, for me, Pulp Fiction is one of my favorites, because I remember when I saw it, I'd never seen anything like it, and I remember the exact theater where I saw it, and, you know, and it was so innovative and different, and then... You know, that's one I still think does hold up when I have rewatched it. I'm like, oh my God, this still is, you know, amazing and fresh. But you see how much people have taken from it. So I imagine someone who's seen it for the first time, you know, relatively recently, probably thinks like, oh, this is like so many of these other, you know, high octane multi-story, you know, modern noir films that are around, but, you know, realize no, but it was the one.
Yeah. I think I had that, the first time I watched, I don't know if you're an anime guy, the first time I watched Akira.
I've never seen it.
Okay. Well, I think I'd already seen a bunch of anime of that era that was like influenced by Akira. So I watched it. I was like, what does everyone love about this movie? Right. And I sort of had to like, recontextualize myself to realize like, oh, this
the same
is
the thing, especially when you also see action movies, like old action movies, like a lot of times they're still great because you can also just appreciate that that they were practical stunts. Yeah. And, you know, it's not the CGI, not the wire work and all that. But at the same time, some of them also look a little, like, yeah, okay, well, cars driving under the subway in New York. What's the big deal? Cause you've seen it again. Cause you've seen it redone so many times. I mean, French Connection obviously still holds up in its own way, but it's not as, you know, it doesn't have the mayhem that a lot of these, you know, newer chasings.
I mean, I think
that one has a different kind of mayhem because William Friedkin was insane. It didn't really get any permits.
I think the early James Bond movies are kind of like that, where it's like now when there's a fist fight in a movie, it's all like hyper, like fast cuts, and you've got the sound effects that sound like people punching.
You compare like John Wick to like, you know, Thunderball or something.
Yeah, yeah. So you watch like a fist fight in Dr. No, and it's like, it seems like the slowest thing in the world.
I can't believe anyone. I don't think I've ever said this, and maybe nobody has said it. I want to go back to Willow for a moment, because
I'll be in the car.
Because that's a great example. It's on Disney Plus, and so I threw it on the other day, and as a kid, of course, I adored it. Yeah, I adored it because I liked Star Wars. You watch Willow, it's just Star Wars. Like the Val Kilmer character is Han Solo.
2 minutes. I thought you were talking about Willard.
Oh,
I was like, and then you said it's like Star Wars. I was like, wait, the rat was like Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then I think Willow.
Ron Howard's Willow.
Yeah.
Where look, like I'm just saying I have a master's degree. Willard is a lot like Star Wars if you look at it way.
Yes.
I've seen Willard for the first time within the last few years. I did not watch that growing up.
I never saw the first one. I saw the remake with Crispin Glover, which I liked.
But do you know who the actor is in the first one?
Yeah, it's Bruce Davison.
Because it's weird to me because of when I came of age, I think of Bruce Davison as like, well, he must have always been middle aged because he was always playing like doctors or politicians or like that sort of thing. And so it's weird to see him as this like, you know, outcast, disaffected young man.
Yeah, it's so interesting, like how big of a role like childhood plays on things because. I loved Willow because it's like, oh, it's just a fantasy version of this thing I already like. You get older and you look at it and you're like, oh, this is just a fantasy ripoff of this thing that people already liked. And George Lucas,
Is it a ripoff of Star Wars?
Oh, my, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, very much so.
Okay.
And there's other things that I do appreciate, which is that they take these little digs at critics because there's a Darth Vader type character named General Kale. And then there is a two-headed dragon that is referred to as an Ibisisk, like Siskel and Ebert, a two-headed monster.
Wow, I forgot that.
Yeah.
Or maybe never noticed that.
Yeah. As a kid, how could you? But that's something that in retrospect, I'm like, oh yeah.
But also that seems like kind of like a self-own to like, to know going in, like your movie sucks.
What the critics are going to say.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah. And then another one, speaking of comedies that like I love and Star Wars, I loved Spaceballs as a kid. I've tried watching it now and it's a slog. It like moves really slow. There's still some humor, of course. Yeah. But yeah, it is not the laugh riot that I remember when I was 8 years old.
Yeah, and I have not. I feel like I was so scarred by revisiting Willow that there are movies from my childhood that I'm like, I'm just going to leave it just there.
Let it be what it is.
Yeah. But then it's also fun sometimes to watch a movie from your childhood and realize that it's even better sometimes. Like I always thought Candyman was a cool horror movie when I was a kid, and I've recently realized like, oh, this is a work of art. This is a masterpiece. Candyman's an amazing movie. I don't know if you're
no.
But do you have anything that you've like?
I'm trying to think if there's something that I thought would be cheesy, but then actually ended up holding up. I'll have to give that some more thought.
Yeah, and some comedies like I think. I guess the Brady Bunch movie came out when I was probably 12 or whatever.
I also remember where I think I actually might have seen that in the same theater I saw Pulp Fiction.
It would have been like the same year, right?
One of the few experiences I had when I saw the Brady Bunch movie where I remember just looking around like, can you guys believe this is happening? Like how funny this is?
Yeah.
Like it was like going to a rock concert. People were laughing so much. I did not expect that to be that funny.
But when I was a kid, I just thought it was funny. Yeah. I didn't realize that like that it was this parody.
Oh, and, really?
And
interesting.
And it wasn't until and they still do it. Like last year there was a Chips movie. Like they're still chasing that. Like they're still doing. Like there's the Starsky and Hutch one.
The Chips a parody?
I don't know. It was a comedy.
Dax Shepard and Michael Pena. Yeah. Like that's.
But yeah. I think this idea of taking like they did with the Beverly Hillbillies, taking like a classic sitcom, it's like let's put it in the modern day. The Addams Family animated movie is the same idea, but none of them are as good.
None of them had Betty Thomas directing it.
Yeah,
and then that cast was so great.
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of movies do you find yourself leaning towards these days, or do you just kind of see anything that you think looks good?
I'm kind of cross genre. I'm a sucker for a heist movie. I'll see almost any heist movie, especially if it's already on Netflix or something like that.
Sure.
I love baseball, so I'll probably see most baseball movies. But other than that, it's a director I like, or writer, or an actor kind of a thing. But like I don't have a specific genre or anything that I gravitate toward. I'm surprised how much I've gotten to like some horror movies, especially like funny horror movies, because that's something I never had any interest in. Then when I started seeing like Cabin in the Woods and what was the other one, the two guys save a something or kill a zombie, or like Dave and
Tucker and Dale
versus Evil. There you go,
that one's great.
That's a really good movie.
Like just realizing like, oh, they can be smart and really funny and high energy, not like I hated the ones where there was just like slow and dark and creepy and a guy and then the jump scares kind of stuff. But ones that were kind of sleek and interesting and stylized, I started to realize, oh, I kind of like those.
I've come to appreciate like 80s slasher movies like as its own genre. It's not a genre it's one I acknowledge and appreciate. And in doing so, I say it's for a very specific group.
Yeah.
I'm not going to denigrate it. I'll just say it's not necessarily for me.
Yeah. And then often I'll go to a Marvel movie or Marvel type movie, usually with a friend of mine who knows that stuff cold, because I don't know any of it, so I can ask a bunch of questions, which he seems to find just darling. the things that I don't understand. So
but like, I think,
who's that guy? It's so interesting because to me they're almost all about the same, and so it's interesting like him telling me which ones are actually good or not good, because
the type of people, and this is not a denigration either, but I'm saying the type of people who tend to know a lot about that kind of stuff,
yeah,
they live for being asked about it. That's all they want to do is regurgitate all the knowledge that they've committed to memory. Yeah.
But it also kind of makes me mad, because it's like my, $16-$70 is as good as the next guy's. Why shouldn't I get to understand what I'm seeing? It's like, why do I have to bring a consigliere to explain it?
And I do think the Marvel movies for the most part do a pretty good job of just like explaining things. But at the same time, I grew up reading comics. So.
Yeah, no, I didn't. And like I saw the last Spider-Man movie and I liked it a lot, but then there was all this other stuff that had nothing to do with the story we were watching, because apparently there were other movies that had to somehow have a say for for 10 or 15 minutes at a time. So it's like, who's this guy? Why is he flying? Why is he fighting that guy? What happened to the spider?
I don't know if you're a dad or not, but those are really good dad type questions.
Really?
Oh, who's funny. This guy? Who's this? What happened to that guy?
Yeah.
I don't get it. What's going on?
I didn't see the
Although, Spider-Man movie. It's funny, one of my very favorite movies, what might be my favorite movie, actually, more recent, was Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely adored. Although, I saw it twice. Both times I was a little high, so I need to see it. It's quite possible that made it my favorite. But both times I was like, oh my god, this is literally the greatest movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's really
and
cool.
And I should probably see it again. Or shouldn't I? Maybe I shouldn't ruin it. Maybe I should just say that's my favorite movie.
It's, I mean, I stone cold sober all the time, and I enjoyed the movie tremendously.
Yeah, and I didn't know all who the different Spider-Mans were, and I didn't know why, I didn't know why certain things were happening, but I thought you kind of didn't need to. You know, I just accepted, like, oh, okay, I guess there's a Spider-Man who's a pig with a John Mulaney. It's like, I guess that's just a thing. It was very easy for me to accept that.
To my knowledge, those other Spider-Men, I think some of them, like the film noir Spider-Man,
the Cage one, yeah.
I think, like, was created just for the movie, but I might be wrong about that.
No, Spider-Man noir. Tweets.
Oh, sorry.
Spider-Man noir does exist.
Yeah. It does exist?
It did. I don't think it was a very long. I think it was a mini series or something.
Oh, okay.
A comic miniseries.
But I didn't know any of those guys other than regular Spider-Man. And even he was barely in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spider-Man noir is my favorite of the Spider-Man from Spider-Verse. He's my favorite.
The way it looked and the way the music was so great.
Is your favorite the Spider-Ham? Is that what you...
No. I don't remember which... I like the one with the colors. I don't know. I honestly couldn't tell you. Okay. I don't know if I could name all... Wait. There was like an anime one. There was the pig. There was the noir.
Yeah.
There was the kid.
Right.
And then there was sort of like the general white guy with a chiseled face.
There was the older Peter Parker, right? That was Jake Johnson?
Jake Johnson.
Yeah. Then if you stayed through the credits, there was Spider-Man 2099.
Is that the one where they were pointing at each other, which is like a meme? I only know that as a meme I've seen on Twitter.
But it was voiced by Oscar Isaac, right?
Yeah. Oh. I'm not up on memes, and so like I didn't even know that was a meme until then I saw the movie, and then I went back and I was like, oh, apparently a lot of people know this, and I do not.
There's too much to know. There's just too much to know nowadays. How can you know all this stuff?
Yeah, and I do get, like, I stress myself out not wanting to be out of touch.
Yeah.
So sometimes, if I were to have missed out on that meme, like, I would beat myself up about it.
but isn't there anything that you find it's like, okay, younger people are into this thing and I just found out about it. Is there anything you're like, I can live without knowing that? Or is it just the fact that, like, do you not like to judge anything?
Wait, what do you mean? Do I not like
for example, if there's a meme that is just dumb, most of them are dumb, but
this theoretical dumb meme, I'll suspend my disbelief.
If it's an acronym, if there's something that's language, I like to know. I don't like to not know what it is. I like to know what it means. Especially if you're seeing it over and over, but a visual meme or anything else, pop culture, like I don't mind not knowing. Yeah.
Or if there's like a turn of phrase or something like that, that younger people know and they use. And then I don't know it, and
by the time you know it, they're not using it anymore.
That's probably true.
Yeah, especially for me. I'll do that with music. I'll be like, oh, this artist must be the hot new thing, and like, oh, they've had the four mixtapes have come and gone in there.
He flamed out and died 8 years ago.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of good art in whatever medium can be appreciated by people who know both. Like I was just watching on Saturday Night Live, they did this music video with Pete Davidson, and Sam Rockwell was playing Stanley Tucci, and it was this music video. It was called like Tucci Gang, I think. Uh-huh. And it was this really great. It was this wonderful, rap song video with Sam Rockwell as Stanley Tucci. How delightful! And then I find out months later, it's based on a real song and a real music video that they were trying to parody shot for shot, called I think Gucci Mane or Gucci.
Gucci Mane is a rapper.
Yeah, Gucci Mane is a rapper, and the song. Again, I don't know what the rapping song he was doing was called something like Gucci something that rhymed. Gucci, maybe it's Gucci Gang. Oh, mm-hmm. Boy, I'm old. But I love that, like, I had no idea and I was still entertained because I thought, what a lovely rapping music video song about Stanley Tucci. And I saw this little interview with Pete Davidson where he said, young people are going to know the Gucci song and not necessarily know who Stanley Tucci is, and the older people are going to know who Stanley Tucci is and not know the Gucci song. And he was exactly right.
Right.
I remember when I watched SNL and I was in the young group, and now I am not.
Well, we've stumbled into...
But I love that it worked in both levels, because once I knew the video and saw how they parodied, I was like, that's even better.
We've stumbled into a hot topic this week on the internet, which is because that a lot of people, probably older than us, are freaking out because Billie Eilish had never heard of Van Halen. I don't know if you
gives a shit.
Exactly. So she was on, she was a guest on Jimmy Kimmel, and Jimmy Kimmel was saying, when I was your age, it was the mid 80s. Yeah. And he was like quizzing her about like the music of the time. And she like knew Madonna. And he was like, and he said, do you know any Van Halen songs? Mm-hmm. And she had never even heard of Van Halen. And so you've got a bunch of people being like, oh, these, you know, basically like,
yeah,
these
kids don't know. She's not doing like that kind of music.
Yes.
It's like, it's one thing to know your predecessors if you're in that era or sorry, in that genre, but who cares? I don't know. I just find that so tired. The whole thing of old people complaining about what the kids don't know anymore. I've just kind of come to accept it. I write on a game show and a lot of times we make questions and jokes that like our audience isn't going to know. And I'm like, once in a while I'm kind of frustrated, but it's like, when I was 25, I didn't know most shit anyway either.
This is the thing. So yeah, my two main reactions to the whole Billie Eilish Van Halen thing is A, the people who are, incensed that she doesn't know who Van Halen is, they probably don't know Billie Eilish.
Right.
Like, so why don't you do the work the other way? And the other thing, and this is me getting a little judgmental, if you didn't grow up with it, Van Halen are not a seminal act.
Yeah.
To me, they're a big 80s act. They're if I were in high school, if I were Billie Eilish's age, and someone, or when I were Billie Eilish's age,
like
if someone
were like the Rolling Stones, you could give her grief for,
But
if someone was active and they've been around forever,
if someone asked teenage me, like, how do you not know who Tommy James and the Shondells are? that would be the equivalent.
But also, again, I was sort of kidding about it, but it's like there's too much to know, and also like the music is distributed in such a different way now that you know it was so limited that of course you would know who that is, but you know there are a lot of popular artists who don't have records.
So
why would you know that? Or you know, back in my day, you know, when we were watching MTV, that was where you watched music videos, and those were the same, you know, 20 songs that they played all day. So of course you would know that.
Yeah, everyone had the same sort of exposure.
My version of that right now is, so I'm a college professor, sorry, adjunct instructor, but
master.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you teach? Make them teach you, call you master, right?
Yes, apparently that's a problem. I teach film history and aesthetics, and then at the beginning of every class, I ask like, hey, what has everyone seen in the last week? And then I say like, I saw this movie or that movie, and so I saw A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which is the Mr. Rogers movie.
Oh, no.
And then I thought, wait a minute. He died in 2003.
Right.
These kids are between 19 and 22.
Yeah.
And so I said, like, how many people here know who Mr. Rogers is? And there's probably like two hands out of 20 or 25. And I don't necessarily judge them for that.
Yeah.
More than anything, I'm just bummed for them because I feel like there's
absolutely.
You
know,
had Steve from Blue's Clues.
That'll be fine.
But that's the thing. Like when I came, you know, when I was a kid, like there was one channel to watch that had kids programming on. So of course, everybody who had a TV was watching Mr. Rogers. But we didn't have the, you know, we didn't have cable or, you know, Nickelodeon and all this other stuff. So like I think you can be sad for them. Oh, you missed out on this wonderful thing.
Yeah.
But no, they're not idiots for not knowing that. It's like each generation has their own choices of what there are, and they keep expanding.
Yeah, and especially the music thing. Like, if you're a musician and you don't know an older musician, I guess I can understand someone being frustrated with that. But at the same time, music is huge.
Yeah.
Like, it encompasses stuff from hundreds of years ago to right now.
Exactly.
All these different genres. And so, I think people, obviously, I think a lot of people just look for a way to make themselves feel better or superior.
Well, I remember the Billie Eilish thing made me think of something that happened almost 20 years ago now, when Avril Lavigne, when she was saying, like, because she had Skater Boy, and she was like, I'm punk, and she would say she was punk. And she didn't know who the Sex Pistols were.
Mm.
And then her response was, I don't need to know who they are because I'm young and they're like old. Right.
Mm.
And so a bunch of like old punks were up in arms, but to me, that's the punkest thing I've ever heard anyone say.
Yeah.
I don't need to know who the Sex Pistols are because they're old.
Yes.
That is awesome. But, the only thing anyone needs to know about Van Halen is that their second lead singer, owns a surprisingly good restaurant chain, called Cabo Wabo.
Mm.
That is, yes, I guess that is one of the things I do know about them, and mostly because of you.
Speaking of, you mentioned not having cable, Jake Heath. I grew up at a time when all my friends had cable. All my peers to this day grew up on cable. I didn't have cable growing up. So like it's a common thing with my wife. Well, she'll make a reference to like Salute Your Shorts or Are You Afraid of the Dark or like Doug, or all these things that I never, right. I never watched, and I don't get the reference. And because I didn't have all that 24-hour a day kid programming, mm-hmm. I am way more familiar with things.
I thought you were going to say I'm way more smart.
No, but like I will make references to like Newhart and right. MASH and like something yeah, yeah. that wasn't for kids, right. but I was watching it because I didn't have Nickelodeon or right. whatever.
You would have. Yeah. We would have been happy to watch Hey Dude if you had given the opportunity.
Probably. Although in retrospect, I'm glad that I saw so much MASH. MASH is good.
Yeah.
And I'm glad
if it's between MASH, a show you know I don't necessarily love, but it's between that and Hey Dude. Mm-hmm. I think you're all right.
But I think the thing, because okay. my wife and I were rewatching Deadwood recently, and William Sanderson to me will always be from Newhart. You know, my brother Daryl. And I made some reference to that. And my wife was like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah, she knows him as J.F. Sebastian from Blade Runner, obviously.
Probably, sure.
Yeah,
or that one episode.
Speaking of Blade Runner, I was just in New York and I went to a Broadway show. And there was a woman there. She was wearing a Blade Runner 2049 like crew jacket, and it was at the intermission. And I was there with my girlfriend, and she was there alone. And I thought, oh, you know, struck up a conversation. I was like, oh, so I saw your Blade Runner jacket. Did you work on the movie? She's like, oh yeah, I did. And I also worked on the original. I was like, oh, what were you doing? And I thought she was, you know, like a grip or something like that. She's like, oh, I was in it. And she says, my name is Sean. And I really were sitting next to Sean Young.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was one of those things, because I'm not a sci-fi guy at all. It was one of those many experiences where I realized, oh, somebody else would be so grateful for this right now. Yeah. But she actually had been on an original, had been on one of my old shows, which I reminded her of, and she had absolutely no memory, yeah. which I don't blame. It's like asking her, you know, about a piece of paper she filed 20 years ago. but I thought that just since you mentioned it, I thought that would bring that up. And then we quickly talked about how what we didn't like about Moulin Rouge, which is what we were seeing.
That's what you were seeing. I was like, how did it get to that?
We were seeing Hamilton. We both hate Moulin Rouge.
The musical of Moulin Rouge.
Oh, yeah. I would have been starstruck by Sean Young from Blade Runner. Also,
she looked great. Recognize her right away because she looks well. She was wearing a cap. I think she was in, you know, Sean Young disguise.
Right.
But I thought it was pretty cool that she wasn't like, oh, I did this and that. She was like, oh, I was in it and I was in the first one because I'm Sean Young.
Yeah. And that's, I guess if you're in New York and you see someone wearing like a crew or like movie gear, you can say like, okay, maybe they worked on it.
Right, right.
Here, it's like they probably got it at Goodwill.
Right, right.
Yes. Goodwill is filled with hanging
with Mr. Cooper swag.
Yeah, a baseball hat that says The Core.
Yeah.
I had a question since we've kind of gotten into this idea of nostalgia and liking stuff that's older than you or whatever. Do you feel like there are just some people that, and I'm not saying this is good or bad, do you think there are just some people that are inclined to be interested in older things?
I think so. I think a lot of times that they think they're super special.
Sure. That,
like, I meet a lot of those people who are just like, you know, I think all movies should be in black and white.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
like,
sure.
You know, that kind of stuff. But I also kind of respect it. Like we've on my podcast on Go Fact Yourself, we ask people, the guests have to provide us with a few topics that they know a lot about outside mm-hmm. their expertise. And then we quiz on them. So it's always interesting to see what people bring up because, you know, a lot of times the same sort of pop culture stuff comes up. And then once in a while, you know, like we had Erica Rhodes on and we asked her, you know, can you give us a favorite movie or something? And she chose The Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So
like, good movie.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
So like that, you know, that's kind of fun. But are there people who gravitate towards that? I think to some degree, you know, I was thinking earlier about our conversation about, you know, why we like what we like. And I know like Lorne Michaels always says that people's favorite, whenever he meets people, he tells them, you know, when they thought Saturday Night Live was the best, it's almost always when they were in junior high.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, cause like that was sort of what their sense of humor is. So yeah, I think depending sort of what your background is, I think it's willful ignorance though, to think that there's not art, you know, that's worthy, that's still being made today. Like, I think that's just pretentious as saying that, you know, only Marvel movies are great. You know, I think that's as bad as saying that you know, there's nothing redeeming in them.
Like, I remember, so I did have cable, and so back when Comedy Central was called the Ha Network,
sure,
I watched a lot of it, and they showed what was the best of Saturday Night Live, and they mm-hmm. showed like stuff from the 1970s, mm-hmm. and I was a kid, so of course I thought Mr. Bill was hilarious, yeah. but I laughed at so much of this stuff. And I don't think I quite realized that it was made by the time I was watching it, that it had been made like 12 or 13 years before. Mm-hmm. To me, it was just like, it's what was in front of me, and so it's present. It's happening now.
Like, did you know who Gerald Ford was?
No, not at all. I saw, the president, a person of respect, is falling down. That's funny. And then, the bass-o-matic and all that sort of thing. And even as a kid, I didn't understand the Coneheads, and I think I still don't. They're just like, they come from France. That's funny. But yeah, I do think this is something that we've talked about before, that there are people who romanticize movies of the past, or really any art of the past.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, movies were just better then. It's like, no, the movies you're watching from then are the ones that have stood the test of time because they're good.
Plenty of crap.
Yeah. We see everything now. So we know all the good and bad. Whereas we're only getting the stuff that has risen to the top.
Yeah. From that's a really good point. Yeah. A lot of times, especially if you look back at what was nominated for Oscars, and you're like, what? Never heard of that one.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, not that that's the only, obviously they're not a
right
arbiter all the time of what was of quality, but it's interesting how many things do fall through the cracks. And then some of those end up being great and get rediscovered.
I remember one of my favorite, it was a few years ago, but one of my favorite lines that was used, somebody was presenting at the Oscars for Best Director, and they said, soon we'll discover who's going to be in the ranks of, Billy Wilder and Steven Spielberg, and then who's going to be cast into the dustbin of history with Alfred Hitchcock and Stanley Kubrick. And I remember being like, that's great. That's a great idea.
That's terrific.
And I love it because it kind of undercuts
The
value of the Oscars while in the middle of the Oscars.
Right.
That's great. What else? I feel like we've
covered a lot of material.
I know we've been going a mile a minute here. Any other favorite movies?
Probably a bunch of them. North by Northwest.
Sure.
Singing in the Rain. Mm-hmm. Why can't one blank on the name? Wrecking for a Dream.
Okay.
That kind of stuff. Magnolia. I could just watch that almost every day.
I've weirdly revisited North by Northwest multiple times in the last year because our nephew was staying with us and he'd never seen it, and I was like, "You'd love this." And then they showed it at they did one of the outdoor screenings at the Gene Autry this past summer.
Oh, I would have gone to that.
The Hollywood Forever is the one that gets all the.
I go there. I've been there a few times.
Yeah, but that's it's a whole ordeal now. Yeah. It's you have to get there way early and stuff.
Yeah.
The Autry. I hope I'm not blowing up their spot, but the Autry is the place to go see outdoor screenings.
It's the same thing with you bring a blanket and snacks.
Yeah, but you don't have to line up super early. There's free parking right there.
That is
There's
nice. Food. I still love the Hollywood Forever. I can't believe it has not been ruined by people who live in LA.
Yeah.
It's been that, it's still that great for that long. People actually watch the movie and how good the sound and how good it looks and all that.
Yeah. I was there, saw The Exorcist there this past summer.
That was, singing in the Rain there was unbelievable. Cool. With people who obviously had not seen it before, with a huge crowd and outdoors and hearing the laughs and hearing the gasps, as Gene Kelly is, doing his moves and all that, it was really special.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was, I forget. So I was TAing for a class that showed Singing in the Rain and then, Singing in the Rain.
Thank
there's
you.
An apostrophe there. And so when I went and taught my section, I showed a clip from, is it called It's Always Fair Weather? I think that might be it. But it's another Gene Kelly vehicle, and it features him, dancing on roller skates.
Mm.
And it is,
you're not thinking of Xanadu.
I'm thinking of Xanadu. Okay. That's it. And it's one of those things that just my student, I've seen it a million times, and then my students are watching it and it's like, and he's like tap dancing. And then he'll just have this big sweeping motion. And he's glided for 15 feet. And then he starts doing it again. It's just like, how is he not falling?
Right,
what is going on here? How is anybody able to do this?
Well, watching Harold Lloyd movies, I just went to a screening of Safety last a month or so ago. And it's even knowing how some of the camera tricks are done, it's still just mind boggling.
Yeah.
And then you see, or seeing these long chase scenes that'll happen in some of his other movies.
Yeah.
And then you find out he broke his wrist there. And that's where and then this stunt he did when he was hanging off the building here, that was after he had
blown his fingers off.
fingers off in one of his hands. And so it's like,
yeah. And
I think so. I'm really, really grateful that I did, at my college, I did a film comedy class.
And it
was chronological and that we started with a lot of those. Cause I had heard of Chaplin and maybe seen a couple of movies, but seeing Buster Keaton and Harold Lloyd is the one that does it for me.
Me as well. I love him.
So getting to see the freshman and getting to see Safety Last and, you know, and then again, but you really need to see it with an audience, you know, to appreciate that.
Yeah,
that's true. That.
Yeah. I saw, this was probably 5 years ago, an outdoor screening downtown, at the, whatever that it's called, the California Plaza at the top of the Angels Flight. Uh-huh. Anyway. Mm-hmm. And they showed Sherlock Jr. Yeah. with live accompaniment, but they before Sherlock Jr., because Sherlock Jr. is really short.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They also showed Cops, mm-hmm. the Buster Keaton short. And that, I know he like broke his spine making the general or whatever, but the right. Isn't
it? I think it was Sherlock Jr. He's on top of a train. He's running one way, the train's going the other, and then he fell in a way where the back of his neck landed.
He's like dangling over the side? Is it that one? There was one where he like he kind of collapsed. Anyway, whatever.
I don't remember exactly which one it is, but he falls and is the back of his neck hit the rail.
Oof.
And he goes, oh man, this really hurts, and he had like a pounding headache for weeks, and then didn't do anything because he was just used to that, and he was a bit of a drinker. Yeah. And then years later, he was getting an X-ray for something. It was like 20 years later, and the guy's like, "Hey, the doctor said, when did you break your neck?" And he goes, "I didn't know that I did." And he goes, "You know what? I bet it was. I bet it was this moment."
But what I was going to say in Cops, the one that got the big reaction is when all the cops are coming at him from every different alley. And a car drives by and he grabs onto the car at full speed and just and you see his whole body just like
leave the ground,
spread eagle out. And and that one got a big reaction. And I remember talking to you, Tyler, afterwards, cause Tyler knows a lot of silent comedy. And I was like, how did he not pull his arm out of his socket? Yeah. And you were like, he probably did.
Yeah. he's a trooper.
Yeah. I remember seeing one. I don't know which of the it was either Buster Keaton or Harold Lloyd, where it was some big car chase and the car hits like a big pothole and kind of like falls apart a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't part of the script.
Yeah.
But that's what they shot. So, you know, the film teacher was telling me, so like they all the teacher I read in a book, they all kind of reconvened and decided, okay, how can we like the movie has to go on from here, like this is the only car that we have and it's got to make it to the finish line.
Yeah.
So they figured out some plot where he, you know, gathers around people and they lift it and they, you know, crank the wheel around and all this kind of stuff. But I love that how improvisational they got to be, or I guess had to be.
Yeah. I mean, they had the official story and then they had their team of gag men who just like, all right, it's been 45 seconds without a gag. We need something.
Right.
It's like, all right, a mouse runs up the leg of his pants. That tended to be something that they did.
A lot of ladders. I remember. Yeah. Yeah. Bring a ladder in here. We're in a church. They got ladders.
The guy, in that silent comedy class, I was so happy that I took it. I just kind of took it on a whim, having seen a fair amount of Chaplin. I think I had only seen The General, wasn't familiar with Lloyd at all, and then the last guy was Langdon.
I was going to say Harry Langdon.
Yeah, and we only watched The Strong Man in that one because class got snowed out another day. And Langdon is a guy who he was so unlike the other ones. Like everybody else, they were all about like this fast motion. He's the exact opposite. Right. He's just like, everything was just drawn out and quiet. And he was like this impish little kid who's constantly processing, how am I going to respond to this? Right. And it was usually, I'm going to suck him in the face.
Right.
But after like 20 minutes of thinking about what he's going to do, Strongman is great. I love it.
Well, this has been a blast, right?
That's it?
Unless you have more you want to talk about.
When are we going to talk about Nazis?
Oh, that's right.
No, I guess we didn't cover that.
Oh, Harry Langdon was a big, big supporter.
Oh, there you go. It all comes together.
Have you seen, speaking of which, have you seen The Great Dictator?
I have.
That's one that I really...
I haven't seen it recently. I'm curious if how I'd react to it nowadays, how it holds up. I remember the time thinking it was rather preachy, which it needed to be.
Yeah, but Chaplin tended to be that as well.
And it was weird. Remember a couple of years ago when the speech from Great Dictator was in like a truck ad?
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is... Oh, Chaplin would have hated that. but... But yeah, the scene, the one that like, I enjoy him. I think he's great. But Jack Oakey shows up as the Mussolini guy, and the two of them, these two maniacal dictators, yeah. each one trying to like one up another,
yeah.
is some of the funniest stuff I've ever seen. I love it.
You know, if I were a better podcast host, I would have prepared some trivia questions for you because you're a trivia guy. Where can people find you on the internet?
Sure. Well, the show I do is called Go Fact Yourself. Our website is gofactorpod.com and on Twitter and Instagram at gofactorpod. I still have a website I haven't updated since 2013. So if you want to see what I was up to then, you go to jkeith.net. And
I'm interested in this Her yes. movie. What's yes. this about?
And what was I saying? So the show is called Go Fact Yourself. It's a game show with celebrities where we trivia and talk about different people's interests and expertise. And we tape live in LA. So if you're in the LA area and want to come to one of our tapings, it's usually free. Again, you can go to gofactorpod.com for schedule and tickets. And it's a lot of fun. And wherever you get podcasts, Go Fact Yourself.
Go Fact Yourself.
F-A-C-T.
And you can find us at BattleshipRetention.com, also Patreon.com/BattleshipRetention. This week on the show, we caught up on the TV we've been watching. So if you mm-hmm. want our thoughts on the new seasons of The Good Place and Silicon Valley and the stuff that Tyler was watching as well,
yes,
you can find that at Patreon.com/BattleshipRetention. Tiers start as low as $2 a month.
Yes.
On the website this week, we've got I reviewed a bunch of shit. You got my reviews of In Fabric, The Aeronauts, Midnight Family, and The Disappearance of My Mother should all be up by the time you're hearing this. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Email us at david@battleshippretension.com or tyler@battleshippretension.com. I'm on Twitter at davypretension. Tyler's on Twitter at tylerpretension. Do you have anything else to plug real quick, Tyler?
Yes, over More Than One Lesson. By the time this goes up, in a couple of days, there will be a new episode of More Than One Lesson at morethanonelesson.com, and it will be about Terrence Malick's A Hidden Life.
Oh, that should be great. That should be fun.
Yes.
I didn't know to say good or great, and I said good.
And then you went to fun, and any yeah. conversation of Terrence Malick is always super fun.
Thin red line laugh, I thought I'd cry.
That reminds me the other night. I can't remember what it was. My wife was like telling me about something that was like food related, and I was like, oh, yum. And then she told me about something else that wasn't food related, and I was like, oh, yum. And she was like, you're not supposed to eat that candle or whatever it was that she was talking about. But apparently I need to pay more attention to people, I think.
I could see that, yeah.
Well, thank you again for being here, Jakeith.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Thank you at home for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.